Welcome to the El Arpa podcast, the home for cultural chit-chat in and outside Madrid. People will talk. So welcome to the El Arpa podcast. We are in
Penedès.
Back to the future. Don't stop me now. You're dancing to that, weren't you, at the weekend?
Yeah, one of many.
One of many hits. So yeah, to be honest with you, we talk a lot about Brexit in part two. Part three, we do a lot of plugging.
How do you know?
Because we have the schedule here written down in front of me.
Huh.
And so yeah, so thank you very much. I'm going to thank you in part two for something else.
What are you thanking me for now?
For being my DIY partner and helping me build a mattress base. And I know you lost your cool and you threw a screwdriver.
But, as you, I should have done.
You lost your head and the head of the screwdriver.
Yeah.
But I forgive you for your outbursts. Passion.
For mattress passions.
Yeah. Let's not get religious on it.
No, it's like, you know, through the door. Trespassing.
Oh, okay.
Like I literally invaded your house.
Sorry. Yeah, that's true. Okay, that was too high level for me. Also, I tried yesterday a really Japanese dessert. I must try and find it for you. It's like this kind of rice that's been pounded into this kind of paste.
And it has ice cream in the middle?
No, it doesn't. It has some kind of gel in the middle. It's kind of slippery and slimy, but there's gel in the middle. Feels really weird, but...
Because I like that ifuku.
Yeah?
That is like ice cream and then it's covered in this...
It's not that, baby.
Well, it's a sayonara, baby. Well, okay.
Okay.
Fine, we'll have to try it.
I'll try and find it again. It was quite nice. All right, then. Well, that's enough for part one. Part two and part three are far more interesting than this guff. So please do stick around and set sail for European shores. Welcome to part two of the podcast, Mary. Thank you very much, I should say, at this juncture. You have been a friend, a confidant, writing partner. And let's be honest, the chauffeur, you've driven me many places and you've driven us all the way to Mustelis today for this podcast in the Parque de las Planetas, which is Planet's Park for those of you who don't hablar the old Spanish there. So in lieu of paying you actual gas money, here's a thank you.
Okay. Yes, that was like, it really makes up for it.
Certainly does. And I should also issue an apology. I got a lot of heat because in the last podcast, I didn't react to your bought a t-shirt joke. To be fair, nobody's reacted to that on our social media, but I feel like that should be addressed anyway, because for you, it was a big thing. And I want to acknowledge the big things to you. And so there's that. So part two has started. In a confessional mode. We're right next to the train tracks. That's the sound in the background there as well. It's a bit of an ambling start to part two. But it's a really, I would say, really nice park, but that would be lying. It is grand. It is fine. It's a nice, lots of greenery. Mustelet seems to have like green fingers all over it. So that's to be respected. And the planets, the solar system is represented here, and they are. We've only seen two. He couldn't be bothered to walk to the rest of them. But we do know, / speculate, that the planets are to scale.
Yeah. To scale.
Well, that... Or what's to... You say it better than me, then.
There's no say any better. Like, I don't know, they're just randomly placed all over the place.
But the distance is kind of like 2S scale, not 2 actual size scale, obviously.
Yeah, I suppose so. No, I have no idea. I actually made that up and told you that.
Oh, I was very convincing of you. So well done. Barry, friend of the podcast, also lied to me last Monday. He fake laughed at one of my anecdotes and then he came clean straight away.
So. I never do that.
No, you don't, so fair play for that. We couldn't find this place. There's like a lot of parks and most delays. And I said, do you remember when I said to you that maybe the universe has been expanding and the park is farther away?
Yes, I remember. I have to fake laughter now.
No, but you really laughed at that, so I just wanted to acknowledge that.
I did.
Yeah. So, anyway, we have a lot to talk about in bite-sized chunks. And so you had a very successful hen party at the weekend. So
it was all right.
Yeah. I saw the pictures of you wearing those L plates, very, very fancy.
What? It was my friends anyway, and yeah, I don't know. It seems like everybody had a successful Saturday night.
That's true. I was out till the crack of dawn, having churros in Plaza Mayor, as you do in Spain. Anyway, that's another story. So you were asking me about we spoke about Brexit in the last episode, and there've been even more developments, haven't there? Because he hadn't prorogued the parliament before our last episode, had he, Boris Johnson?
I don't think so, to be honest. We were already complaining, but I don't think we were complaining about that.
No. So that's one development. The second development is like he's potentially going to kick out members of his party that are against a no-deal Brexit.
Yeah.
There's been a rake of firings. Another I say non-Brexit related. They are Brexit related, but in terms of some things to do with schools, how it's teachers have more leeway to have this kind of non-specified right to use force, for example, but also as well how they're planning to manage how families see each other before they're deported and things like that as well. Also, we've had the, I say we as in humanity, not that we're British or anything, the Scottish, just avoid that mistake, and the Scottish Conservative leader also leaving as well. So it's been quite a busy week in terms of Brexit. I mean, most weeks are pretty eventful in regards to that. So is there anything that you'd like to comment on in particular? I guess we'll touch on all of them, but maybe there's something that you would like to give your take on first.
Well, it's just like turning into a mad dictatorship.
Yeah.
That's what I want to say. And also, I don't know, because, well, there's like some blasts from the past. So like, for example, John Major.
That's quite surprising, yeah.
Yeah, because, well, like, I think he went down in history as being completely uncharismatic. So now it's kind of like a shock that he suddenly decided to do this. And it would be funny if in the end he was like, remember for this.
Well,
you know, as standing up.
Yeah.
Because also Blair spoke today.
Yeah, well, the thing is Blair has been consistently anti-Brexit, but Blair has no credibility because of the Iraq war in Britain. Like, he's a hated figure. And also because he has a lot of private companies, people see him as some kind of fat cat. So what Tony Blair says carries like little to no weight in the UK.
Yeah, but all he said today was that, I mean, he spoke against his own party because he said that it was best if elections weren't called.
Well, I think he's right.
Because they would lose them.
They would lose them. And
yeah.
But the fact that they would lose them is a real comment on how ineffectual Jeremy Corbyn has been. I mean, any other leader of the Labour Party would win that election if there was an election, or would have performed better over the last few years that Brexit's been rolling on, you know? So,
yeah.
So I think...
It's a shame. It's a missed opportunity for Labour, for sure.
Yeah, definitely. Also, as well, we mentioned that we have a book deal. We're not going to go into it as such. But
we're not going to go into it, but every week we're going to tell you a little bit about things we research.
Exactly. No, but generally, like, it is a story of, there's different chapters. Each chapter is a unique story, but they're based on historical things.
On things.
But the thing is, if you have a microphone in the park, everybody stares at you. But the thing is, these stories are basically a testament to how, like, lies mount up. And common sense rarely prevails, and it's only by looking back 2020 we can see the story of a crisis foretold and ignored and then allowed to to carry out, you know. So that, I mean, even going back to World War II, which is what Brexiteers love happening on about, I mean, that was foretold as well, but nobody really listened to the gathering thunderstorms of war, to the signs. And it's the same thing here. I just don't understand how, like, the story of how Brexit's playing out in its final stages. And by final stages, of course, there's another train. I mean, we're talking about a no deal. Obviously, this is that's a temporary final stage, if that makes sense, because obviously at some point there will have to be a deal struck with the European Union of some description. But for all intents and purposes, this is the kind of the last stage of Brexit. But it's just becoming increasingly undemocratic, as you mentioned. But the whole thing for these Brexiteers, who are really heavy on symbolism and rhetoric, but very poor on facts, is that this is the democratic decision. 17 million people voted, and this is the will of the people. But now everything that they're doing in these latter stages is going against kind of the spirit of democracy, and, to use their terminology, what the men who fought on the beaches died for, you know. So, and I mean, just even though it's not legally wrong, you know, it's not illegal, but that's more of a coincidence, or not, it's a circumstantial thing, because it's, they have famously don't have a written down constitution, which might be something they'd like to rectify maybe after this. You know, suspending a parliament in a parliamentary democracy should be something transgressive, should be something that is like taboo,
to be avoided.
I know it happens naturally, but when it does happen normally, there's just cause for it. But this is like a very exceptional circumstance, you know. If you talk to a Brexiteer about it, hola chico, you know, for example, like that, I got lost my train of thought, there's too many people in the park.
I like to say that in Google reviews it says one of the quietest parks in Madrid.
So we've come here with a microphone wrecking the gaff. But so they won't ever acknowledge that their whole process is anti-democratic, yeah. And they'll point the finger at the the inverted commas Ramoners. Yeah. And that is what really kind of sticks in my craw about this. You know, there's a whole catalogue of deception, there's a whole catalogue of misinformation, there's a whole catalogue of pointing fingers, accusing other people, namely the left, of doing things that the right have become very expert at, you know. But that's from the political class, but then the people who are voting for it, friend of the show, James O'Brien on LBC. By friend of the show, I mean we listen to him, not that he actually knows us, but people who are Brexit supporters call his show, and it literally boils down to, like, there's no arguments, they don't know what they're talking about. They've been convinced somehow by Farage and his cronies that I'm going to be worse off economically, I'm going to lose my job, but that's okay because that's what we voted for and that's what needs to happen. Each week there's a new shocking claim, not revelation, but in terms of, like, why do you want to leave the EU? Because I want to have fish and chips and newspapers. Why do you want to leave the EU? Because I want to be able to crush grapes with my feet and make wine. Why do you want to leave the EU? Because the shape of the banana. I mean, these are not like exaggerations.
Yes.
These are what people even today are arguing for, because they've run out of all other arguments. And then sometimes James O'Brien kind of has this kind of monologue where he kind of sums up his feelings on a particular issue, and there's no callers. And he's like saying it's come to the stage where people who are calling in support of Brexit no longer have any arguments for it, but they're just saying, oh, I love it because it annoys left-wingers like you. Oh, and that's just the state of the debate as it is at the moment. So, you said to me off microphone, not camera, as you accused me of saying earlier. I realize this is not being filmed.
But you can watch that on, you can also watch it, the radio.
You can watch that radio show, yeah, but not with our podcast. Anyway, that's beside the point. Another train. Train count 3 so far. Train spotting, yeah. Yeah, it's just become this farce, you know, but it has like very big consequences, obviously. I was mentioning to you as well, this woman called in, not to James O'Brien, but to another presenter on LBC, and she was like saying that some guff about closing the borders and all that kind of stuff. But as was demonstrated to her, because they're losing, their agreements with the European Union, then that makes their borders more open, because as it stands now in the European Union, because of all the immigration and refugee crisis, You know, they have more power to say to France or to Germany who they will take and who they won't. But now they're losing that, they will lose also that right as well. And that's something that should make sense when you hear it. But a lot of people live in cloud cuckoo land when it comes to Brexit. And unfortunately, cloud cuckoo land won't have a trade deal with Britain after Brexit. So,
Nine Cuckoo Land Street.
End of rent.
Okay, well, no, that last thing you said was a very interesting take, because I guess it's something that
the rest
is
was rubbish, though, but the...
No, because I was just picking on that because it's just a different way of looking at it. Because as you said, like, there's the assumption that, you know, it's going to be easier or to manage our own things, but there are rules now, and as you say, they won't be subject to those rules. I was just like, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago I was reading about, on Twitter, about Northern Ireland and about people that live right in the border with the Republic and sell all their products. And literally like cross the border every day to sell their products in the Republic. And how they're going to be affected by that. And
well, sorry, go on.
No, I just think like in the end, like there's all these big discussions about how, you know, it's going to be the economy like this other thing. And then it would be quite important to look at specific stories, you know, especially for the people that are right in the borders and are going to be affected by that on a daily basis.
Well, like. The BBC have tried that with one podcast, but they're so inept. The BBC are a joke anyway, but like...
Oh, the BBC are just not reliable anymore.
But even like... educated British people like have no understanding of what the border implications are going to be, but the Irish media, and I mentioned in the last podcast about Eamon Dunphy and David McWilliams and a few other shows as well, have explored the implications of this. And there's even a report today in The Guardian talking about every possible scenario of the Northern Ireland border has complications. But but going back to the podcast, I mean, I think it was Eamon Dunphy's second most recent podcast about Brexit. He goes into great detail about what's going to happen to Northern Ireland in terms of the dairy industry, because Northern Ireland has a lot of agricultural sector. So like, there's two ways that is managed. One, they export a lot to the Republic, and a lot of Republic's dairy, especially up towards the north of the country, comes from the north, and that does cross every day. People do live on either side of the border. In BBC Northern Ireland offices, one of the guys they interviewed lived in the Republic actually and drove to work every day in the north. But also another thing, which I might have mentioned in last week's podcast, but I think I've mentioned to you anyway, is that they export a lot of it to Africa as well through the European Union, because they sell the milk to, it's some kind of charity initiative done by an NGO and also the European Union as well. I think to help like mothers with newborn babies, but that's gone overnight as well. So you're going to have the situation where they're not going to be able to export, and also overnight there's going to be a complete drop off in trade with the Republic, which is going to be very shocking. In terms of Ireland as well, there's like obviously a land bridge between Ireland and Europe, the continental Europe, which is Britain. So we don't know how our trucks are going to get to Europe or how trucks are going to come from Europe to us, but also we're an export oriented economy, and so there's a lot of unknown, like nobody knows what's going to happen basically. But as I said, as on the previous podcast, what's going to happen is probably the European Union will have to air drop in supplies and things like that, which is very dramatic. But linked to that is even the last 2 days, like Jacob Rees-Mogg's and Farage and a few other politicians have been saying there's not going to be food shortages. That's a myth, but that is demonstrably incorrect as well, because for the last year or so they've been stockpiling food, because
I don't think Rees-Mogg is the
he's not going to suffer anyway,
the person most in touch with the reality.
Well, he's not going to be, you know, queuing up to buy the cheapest fish fingers from Iceland, you know, supermarket. So but you know, most countries only have food supplies for X amount of months, you know, and it's already been proven that the agriculture in Britain won't be able to supply enough for people over like even a midterm or a short term, you know, and there'll be a little bit of time that they can live off what they're producing themselves, but they won't be able to, because they can't import things. There's going to be a very shortly after Brexit, there's going to be a huge food shortfall on the island. So, you know, but that's just more example of the Brexiteers' lies, you know. Okay.
Yes.
You give me a strange look for some reason.
No, no.
Okay. Why?
No, because like, no, I misunderstood what I understood now.
Okay, good. And but going back to Northern Ireland, yes, it's primarily a cultural company. I think Harland and Wolff are closing down or have closed down already.
Mm-hmm.
I must check that. But yeah, in terms of industry, there's not much. It's very agricultural, and their biggest market is Ireland. And Britain as a whole, even though you know, Northern Ireland isn't actually British, it's the United Kingdom of Northern Ireland and Great Britain, but that's beside the point. Like, most of the British market is to us as well. So, I mean, with this hard border, specifically with Ireland, but of course with the rest of the world, yes, Ireland will feel the pinch, but Brexit Britain is going to feel it more. And Northern Ireland is going to be completely screwed. Wales also, but Northern Ireland is going to be destroyed. And the DUP should be ashamed, really, of what they've done, because, like, as I think we might have mentioned as well last week, the withdrawal agreement from Theresa May, and Theresa May is not perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but it was a lot better than that's what on the table now, which is absolutely...
Oh, what's on the table is nothing,
exactly.
Really. I mean, because even this morning when he said about... there was one of the ministers that said, well, like, if the other conservative MPs don't support it, they're just basically, you know, throwing off everything that... the Prime Minister has achieved with negotiations and stuff like that, and then straight away the European Union said there has been no negotiations and nothing has been achieved with him. So,
yeah,
you know, you cannot destroy what has not been started.
But, like, you know, Boris Johnson is also, I mean, they've been master manipulators in terms of setting up the language. He said 2 weeks ago about this terrible conspiracy of people to try and stop a no-deal Brexit, you know. And again, it's playing into this... kind of identity politics of, you know, if I vote for Brexit, I'm fighting for a free and independent and democratic country.
Yeah.
While, you know, the corrupt politicians and the people with business interests and, you know, the suspicious left are all conspiring to stop that, you know. And then that kind of language indirectly does lead to people getting hurt. You know, Trump's been a master of that as well. And you have people being involved in conspiracies or actually murdering people as well, as we've seen in different incidents in the United States. So, I mean, it's not inconceivable that another politician like Joe Cox could be murdered off the back of this kind of loaded language, you know? That's just gives him enough room to distance himself from it, but in reality, he's radicalizing a lot of people.
It's just irresponsible.
It's very irresponsible, yeah. But thinking about the DUP in Northern Ireland is that obviously they sold out their own regions because, you know, if people voted for Brexit for this idealized version of Britain, they've always been forgotten sibling of the British, and they want to feel more British. And what's more British than voting for something that evokes a certain kind of Britain? And that's what they've bet it all on, and the stakes are very high. And the House, i.e. Europe, is going to win, baby. So, yeah.
Okay, well.
Yeah. And the little short thing about the Conservative leader who left as well in Scotland. Mentioned the Guardian. So sorry, just people walking past here. The perils of recording in a park. We're the youngest people here by half, by the way. There's no doubt about that. So it's, again, like as I said to you earlier, the Guardian were really writing glowing tributes to her. But the comments and the articles were really, I think, revealing, because they were kind of mentioning how well she's. Very patchy record and things like rape and abortion, and she was openly courting the sectarian Orange Order as well, who are violent, have a violent history in Northern Ireland and also in Scotland. So she's just another Tory, basically. But this is the kind of another side of identity politics that if you have a certain profile, no matter what you do or what you represent, there's going to be people kind of blowing smoke up your behind, no matter what. Anyway, this is Enda's political rant hour, because Mary's been very quiet.
I mean, we've talked about it plenty of times, and,
yeah.
And I fully agree, but yeah, I think the lack of like a sense of responsibility is the most worrying thing, but also the fact that I was saying to you the other day that I think we live in a political situation like worldwide where it seems that anything could happen and nothing would happen, in the sense that, you know, there seems to be like a total lack of accountability.
Well, like what they're saying now is that even what's happening in the last week with these firings, you know, Boris threatening to get rid of certain politicians and this the suspension of parliament, like that, you know, very recently that would seem to, yeah, as you mentioned, inconceivable, but now that it's happening, it's like we're inhabiting this reality where no matter what happens, it is just taken for granted that this is...
Well, things keep going just a step further, and then every time it gets worse, then people get used to that level, and then it just keeps going.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it'd be interesting to see where it ends, because I don't think... I don't know, there's like a very quick escalation,
yeah.
Of events.
Well, like, I mean, Trump, for example, is obviously, like, but latest reports indicate, and I know you didn't believe me when I said this, but there's been more reports that he's going to look likely to lose his election. Because what I think is, like, the worst thing for these people, initially, is for us, is for them to get power, but then when they have power, they lose, they fire their last bullet, and then they get voted out because they're seen as being incompetent. Now, with Trump, that's not as cut and dry, because you still have these people who are ideologically wedded to his worldview because they're not, how do I say this, educated. But I know that sounds very harsh, but like, if the facts are there about, I mean, his presidency, and it, people, well, it's not because they're not educated, they just refuse to accept certain things. But anyway, my point is, like, he's going to pay the political cost probably in the next election. But what my worry is now, looking at Brexit Britain, is that, like, it seems that they're creating it, they're muddying the waters enough with their language and their actions, that whatever the fallout is, that they can blame it on somebody else, and they won't lose a lot of political capital. And Boris Johnson, who's been a Teflon twat and a Tory, will probably still inhabit that kind of bumbling failure, but is resistant to any kind of long-term consequence. You know,
definitely the worst thing is that I think we'll have to talk about it in a lot more episodes. but yeah, you never know, there might be a surprise in the next few weeks. Just hoping.
Here's hoping. Okay, well, I think that wraps up for part two. We're gonna jump gingerly to part three while the border is still open. Welcome back to part three. Dave Chappelle's new comedy special. Didn't like it. Don't watch it. So normally, as I said to you, I don't mind comedians who kind of poke the kind of sensitive left. We're lefties, but we're not sensitive lefties.
We're not snowflakes.
We're not snowflakes, no. Not in the Spanish heat anyway. Yeah, one review put it really nicely. If his jokes were funny to begin with, he wouldn't have to spend enough time, or a lot of time, justifying their existence, which I think is fair enough. But I have high hopes for Bill Burr's special. But then again, his last one was terrible, so we'll watch that space. I will. You won't be watching it.
You'll tell me about it.
I presume. So, well, advertise that, sugar.
The podcast on all platforms, so I'm not going to advertise a particular platform. And then Twitter, El Arpa One, we're on Instagram, we're on Facebook.
Very good.
On Facebook we keep getting lots of hits.
That's good.
Yeah, that's nice. Lots of discussion about different topics, about the blog. And the blog is our irishsliceofmadrid.com.
Yeah.
.com. Because we're very European.
No, if we're very European, it'd be irishslice.eu.
Well, okay, well, it's .com. Because that was the cheapest domain, okay?
We might change the domain out of principle. We'll see what
and,
happens.
And, and that's it.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's it then. So, the world is doomed. Good luck.
Bye. I was actually going to say that we have to change the sticker on my car because it's faded. We'll buy a new one with irish-madrid.com.
Good, that stays in the pantry.
The El Arpa Podcast, the home for cultural chit-chat in and outside Madrid. People will talk.